You're listening to the first episode of Adrift, written and read by Doyce Testerman. Every few days, we'll bring you another installment of the story, as it's written, as part of an insane overcomplication of what should be a simple NaNoWriMo project. You may be downloading these podcasts via iTunes or Podiobooks, and if so, I'd like to invite you to come by my website, doycetesterman.com, to comment and join in the conversation, or you can contact me directly at doyce@doycetesterman.com. With all that said, let's get on with the story. I used to tell stories. I don't anymore, and they probably weren't much good even when I did, but I liked them, and Caitlin liked them, and that was enough. They always started the same way. Once upon a time. Not very original, but it worked for us. It's what I know, so I suppose I'll start this story out the same way. Once upon a time, there was a ship captain. The captain's name was Finrus Merrick Alabram Delane, which was a mess of a name, but the captain had been wearing it long enough that it sort of suited him. The ship was called the Binturong, which was kind of the opposite of the captain's situation. The name was pretty, and the ship was an ugly mess. But eventually everyone got used to that, too. The ship was home to four souls, which is another way of saying that four people lived on the ship. The ship used to have quite a few more souls on her. People say her when they talk about ships. And their souls used to be better than the ones there now. But that was a long time ago. Since that time, a lot of things have changed. Gotten worse. The captain is probably one of them. At least he thinks he is. And that makes him sad when he thinks about it. Right at the moment where we start this story, however, he's not thinking about it. He's too busy. He's trying to find his daughter. Captain! I leaned sideways from where I sat against the bulkhead in my bunk and keyed the comms. Go! We're coming up on the station. I noticed the hesitation in Deirdre's voice only because it so rarely happened. She's not the kind to hunt for words, though that's mostly because she used so damn few of them she could keep all the regular ones immediately at hand. On my way! I tossed the old handwritten journal on the covers, pulled myself out of the bunk and onto the deck, and took the opportunity to get in a good arms-over-the-head stretch. Except for the cargo bay, that particular spot, right in the center of my quarters, was the only one in the whole damn ship where I had enough clearance to do so. I'd never tell anyone, but it was the main reason I let John have the bigger bunk, closer to the bridge, that you didn't have to climb up a ladder to get out of. Not that the extra distance to the bridge really made that much difference. The bin was pretty compact, which was a nice way of saying cramped. And I walked up to Deirdre's pilot chair 2 minutes after she calmed me. Captain! She said the word the way she said pretty much everything. The quickest way to describe it was blank, like a particularly good auto-reading program with no inflection modes engaged. I used to think it was the most unnerving thing I'd ever heard. Since then, I've come to the conclusion it's only one of the most unnerving. Deirdre? I stepped up next to the chair and gave her a smile. How are we doing? Her head turned and she looked up at me. Straight black hair, dark eyes, pale skin. Her expression, like her voice, was blank. The face of someone who meets your eyes for a second in the middle of a crowd, but has other things on their mind. She didn't return my smile. Her gaze turned back to the worn panel in front of her, adjusting settings so subtly she didn't seem to be moving the controls, just verifying by touch that they were still where she left them. But I could feel the ship respond in a way it almost never did for me. Smoothly. Some people have pets that only show affection for their owner, and either barely tolerate or actively hate anyone else they ever meet. The bin was like that. Except I'd bought the damn thing, and it liked Deirdre better. No change from our last conversation, Captain, she finally replied. I meant, how are we doing with closing in on the drift? I waved a finger in the direction of the clear forward canopy, through which I saw only a slowly wheeling expanse of stars. Where is it? Deirdre was probably the smartest person I'd ever met, but that didn't mean she was particularly good at people. In my experience, it usually meant the opposite. Though, to be fair, I wasn't very good with people when I was her age either. Like the pilot's chair that she sat in, the knobs, levers, and switches Deirdre was adjusting looked ridiculously oversized. They weren't. Deirdre was simply small. She joined the crew just over 2 years ago. Her crash certificate indicated she was near the top of her class for piloting and mathematics, and listed the date of her decanting from an artificial womb 8 years previous. Just before the 10th anniversary of that date, I'd asked her what she wanted for her birthday. She hadn't understood the question. When I explained, she thought about it, then said she'd very much like it if I could arrange to update the ship's navigation charts. It was the most enthusiasm I'd ever seen from her. As you arrived on the bridge, I completed the reverse burn that you instructed I use for slowing our approach. Yeah, the engine flare will keep any unfriendlies from scanning us while we're coming in, I started to explain. She looked up at me again, unblinking. Interrupted. Right. Sorry. I gestured. Go on. She indicated the forward canopy. Having completed our burn, I have turned the ship. We are coming fore to aft, which will bring the station into view. Her head tilted a centimeter, as though she were listening. Now. A wall of floating steel swung into view, blocking out the stars entirely. Deirdre leaned over the controls again, stopping our turn. The drift, what little I could see of it from our vantage point, was the same as I remembered, a vast patchwork quilt of mismatched metal, multi-millennia-deep piles of ships welded into a moon-sized satellite that predated any written history on Caliban. It wandered through a loose orbit around an otherwise unremarkable star on the border between what the Concordant Navy called controlled space and the remnants, a location that attracted any number of unsavory remnant species. Vagabonds, vagrants, traitors, beggars, mercenaries, killers, crime lords, and those too unlucky to get away from them. It was a huge, dead beast's carcass infested with uncounted parasites and scavengers. It was also really, really close. Holy smoking Isbell, girl, what the hell were you thinking? The words came out harsher than I intended. I got edgy when I was about to crash into something much, much bigger than me. I followed your directions exactly. Deirdre didn't look at me this time. Her hands glided over the controls. Her eyes flickered from scanner readouts to the forward canopy and then back, and it occurred to me that she was doing the math for the approach vectors in her head while she talked to me. A reverse approach with the main engines hot, using braking thrust to bring us as close as possible to the station without damaging ourselves or the station itself. We are... She checked a tertiary readout. 1,340 meters from hard dock. What? How? It wasn't very often that Deirdre's piloting rendered me speechless, but I wouldn't mind if it happened a lot less. While I gaped, she pulled down the comms headset and opened frequencies, still making adjustments with her other hand. Hail the station. This is CFN2305S on approach vector 75119. She checked the distance readout again. 1019 and closing. Repeat, this is Concordance Free Navy Vessel Designation 2305 Scout Class, requesting docking clearance at... If I hadn't been so surprised at the drift's sudden proximity, I would have stopped her before she even opened comms. As it was, I had to lunge over the chair and jerk the handset away from her. Sunside, 45 by 16, I barked into the handset, naming a latitude and longitude almost 100,000 meters around the station. We're landing now. Get your shunting asses out of the way or grease our treads. I hung the handset back up and gave Deirdre a look. One fine eyebrow lowered as she returned my gaze. On her, that counted as a glare. Are we landing somewhere else, Captain? We're landing at whatever bay or airlock you've got us pointed at, I replied. Her hands paused over the controls. We don't have clearance, which is a small comfort. This... I pointed out the forward canopy, is the drift. Advertising our landing dock is quite a bit like inviting every pirate or thief in broadcast range to tea. I bent into a crouch and rested my hands on the arm of Deirdre's chair, letting my voice lower. Putting our idea up on comms in a place like this is... adorable. I gave her a small smile. But it'll get us killed, understand? For a few seconds, everything felt very familiar. Me crouched down by that chair, giving pointers and advice to someone far too young and far too small to be sitting in front of the controls. It was a good memory, and I didn't mind hanging on to it for a little while longer. But Deirdre didn't give me my smile back, and the moment was gone. The memory that had come with it, that much more ragged, and worn. "I understand, Captain." She returned her attention to the docking process. "I won't make the mistake a second time. I apologize." "No need," I murmured, and stood back up. "It was more my mistake than yours."
"I'd kind of have to agree with that."
John stepped through the hatch and onto the bridge. His eyes went past me to the view just outside.
"Think you got us in there close enough?"
"More than." I turned away from Deirdre and stepped closer to him. He took a drink from the metal mug he'd had as long as I'd known him.
"Thought I heard you on comms when I walked in."
"You did." I glanced over my shoulder. We'd moved close enough to the dock that jutting protrusions from the bodies of nearby ship corpses affixed to the outermost skin of the drift cast shadows over us. Our comms mod makes Deirdre sound like a chain-smoking ore miner. I turned back to him. "Fairly unlikely anyone recognized my voice through that." John lowered his cup and swallowed.
"You hope?"
"Yeah." I gave him a short nod. We'd known each other too long to waste effort on pep talks. "I hope." Which was true. That was exactly what I was doing. I hoped. Thanks for listening to this installment of Adrift, written and read by Dois Testerman. This podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 license. For more information, visit creativecommons.com. Adrift was first conceived as a serialized flash fiction story, told 140 characters at a time via Twitter, and in fact continues today and every day as an ongoing story. You can check it out on Twitter at www.twitter.com/finris or on my website at doistesterman.com/adrift. Our intro music is Invisible Walls by Revolution Void off their album Increase the Dosage, available from jamendo.com. Our outro music is Struttin' by Triad, also available from jamendo.com. There are many people to thank for their help and input on this project, but the two that jump right out at me, sometimes literally, are my wife Kate and Tim White, perhaps best known in this arena for his Return to Northmoor podcast. One of these individuals has been an unfailing, unflagging, ever-optimistic beacon of support and positive thinking. The other has given me tremendous technical help, suggestions, and advice as I learn how much I don't know about podcasting. Which one is which? I'll leave as an exercise for the listener. Speaking to this tiny box, through wires, words, walk, strutting down browser blocks, worldwide transmission talk, fuzzy flicker FM balls, dear and dash to the walls, podcast, broadcast, signal, no noise, global infinite internet choice, music chunks get it all for free, major labels don't get me, contracts kiss my industry, I'll sing the system to its knees.